Hello everyone, before we start today's show, I just wanted to let you know that this is the last Own the Build of 2022. We will be back in January, on the second Monday in January, Monday the 9th of January, with a special episode reflecting on the year that we've just had. And then, obviously, we have episode 100, which is really exciting. Until then, until January, wishing you all a very Merry Christmas. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all your feedback. And thank you for being an Own the Builder. I hope you enjoy this episode. I'll speak to you in 2023.
You are now tuning in to the Own the Build podcast. Join Ceilink's very own Paul Hemming, where each week he interviews experts from the world of construction and asks all the important questions around intelligent construction management.
Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the Own the Build podcast with me, Paul Hemming. How is everyone doing today? I'm doing well. I'm going to bore you yet again with another little plug of Ceilink. I know I've been doing this quite a bit recently, but it struck me this morning when I was sitting down preparing for the show that this episode is all about kind of why we are struggling so much with labour in UK construction. I was speaking with the main contractor just yesterday, who was saying they're really struggling to find quantity surveyors to employ. I then read that 54% of main contractors currently reporting that they don't have enough QSs and there aren't enough in the market. I even, because I'm a sad man, started running a poll today on whether people were struggling to find QSs. At the moment, 80% of the respondees have said that they're really struggling to find QSs. Now, Ceilink is software built by QSs and software engineers, and we've created software that effectively saves a QS 600 hours of their precious time on each project doing subcontract management. Our software will read the drawings, create contracts, create tender documents that are really, really slick, scopes of work, has a built-in supply chain. It is not software that eliminates the need for a QS, but it will make the QSs that you do have far, far more efficient and productive, and they can then focus on the things that really matter. If you're struggling with commercial work, finding QSs, I'm going to leave demo link in the notes. Reach out and I can talk to you about it. Enough from me about Ceilink. I seem to be doing it more and more these days, so I do apologise. It must be because I'm getting close to episode 100, but today in the studio, I'm joined by David Nash, and you'll have to bear with me here because he is from a company that has got quite an organisation that has got a long and extensive name. So David is the Director of Strategy and Policy at the Engineering Construction Industry Training Board. Some of you will have heard of it, the ECITB. Some of you will have heard of the CITB. It's a non-departmental public body supporting training and skills development across the engineering construction industry in England, Scotland and Wales. David is going to tell us much more about it. I've probably done it no justice whatsoever, as per usual. Welcome to the show, David. How are you?
Thank you very much, Paul. Delighted to be here, and I'm really well, and thanks for getting the acronym right. Great start.
Is it okay? Did I nail that?
You did nail it. I've heard it done many different ways, and you
What's the worst
it.
That you've heard?
I mean, we often get CITB, but that's fair enough. There's one letter different, but I've heard any combination of those letters, the occasional EXITB as well, which sounds like
exciting, like
a fintech company, which is not
excellent. Okay, well, I realised I was just banging on myself about the skill shortage, and I realised that we're going to talk about that kind of today. But it's remarkable that this is both a blue and white collar skill shortage, bricklayers on site, QSs, as per my example. What's your experience? Is it something that you're hearing about every day as well?
It is the number one live issue facing our industry, engineering construction. Paul and I, you know, I can talk a little bit about the differences between engineering construction and construction in the built environment. And as you pointed out, you know, the CITB very much look after training and skills development in that industry. But absolutely, every single employer that I speak to up and down the country is saying the same thing, and has been really for the last 12 months, which is not only are they struggling to find skilled labour for projects that are taking place now, you know, they're looking at the contracts that are being let coming down the track, and you know, there's a huge amount of work out there, which is, you know, absolutely fantastic. But
who's gonna do it?
Number one issue is who's going to do it exactly.
Yeah.
It's a common issue facing our sector. It's, to be frank, it's an issue facing many sectors of the economy, and you know, has really been exacerbated since COVID, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's funny because that thing that I was saying at the top of the show, I didn't prepare that specific. I didn't come into the show thinking I was going to say that until this morning. A couple of things just kind of like came together. And, you know, we've been talking about the skill shortage in construction for, we're on episode 98. We've talked about it a few times in the past 2 years ourselves, but being there just kind of rumbling around in the background. To me, it's kind of come alive in the last couple of weeks through a few conversations that I've had where me, my clients, etc., starting to feel it. I'm sure you're going to tell me, where the hell have you been, Paul? This has been a problem for a long time. But I'm really excited to kind of like bring it to the fore and understand how you guys are helping to manage that and what the wider industry can do. Before we do that, could you just, for the benefit of everyone listening, first just talk a little bit about yourself, your career, and then the ECITB? I've nailed it again.
Great. Well, absolutely. So I'm what you could probably call a public policy professional, or a policy wonk, which is often the sort of pejorative term that's used. But I've spent up to about 15 years now working in and around government, both in Westminster and with the devolved nation governments too. I started out my career at IPPR, which is the think tank, and I worked there on energy policy, climate change, and also economics. And then I moved on to a senior...
Is that in 55 Tufton Street? Is that... That's where all the talk of the think tanks is these days, right?
Yeah, they're in a different part of town, shall we say.
And are you in the less sensational part? Is that where you were?
Yeah, less sensational. And they, you know, IPPR are on a certain point of the political divide. It's more to the centre, more to the left than some of the others. But so IPPR, and then I moved on to the Federation of Small Businesses, Paul. So worked for a number of years as their senior policy advisor, covering labour markets, industry, trade. It was quite a broad brief. And then since 2016, I've very much focused in on skills and engineering by joining the ECITB, and I've been there now for going on 7 years, working, as you say, as their director of strategy and policy. And ECITB, so we're an arm's length body, government body, as you say, Paul. We were originally set up in the 60s, so ourselves, CITB, and there were industrial training boards spanning multiple sectors in the economy, right through from manufacturing through to services. And essentially, we are the statutory skills body for engineering construction, and our job is to sort of set standards for training. And also, we raise a statutory levy, and we use that funding to support training in our industry, like CITB does, although they're two separate levies.
Yeah, see, my experience, and again, was more in the building side of the sector, and my experience of CITB was the levy, basically, that kind of has a QS you would have on all your payment notices, your applications, etc. So it was something that you became very aware of. I have to admit, put my hands in the air, I did kind of know what it was, and I don't want to talk about CITB, I want to talk about the concept of the two, as to... I knew that something was happening. I didn't ever really understand why. Or, to be honest with you, I didn't have a huge care as to why. I just kind of thought, oh, that's what happens, and kind of administered it through the processes, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason, I mean, certainly speaking for ECITB, the reason that we were set up, and I suppose continue to this day, is that I'm going to use sort of economics jargon, but you know, governments have said in this industry or in these industries, there is a market failure for skills. Now, what does that mean? Essentially, there are some inherent barriers that prevent companies training their workforce in these industries. And
rubbish margins being one, I guess?
Rubbish margins being one. The nature of the industry. So, you know, we work with tier one contractors and below in their supply chain. And they are essentially, and I should sort of say a little bit about what engineering construction is as distinct from construction, but our companies are essentially doing engineering design, construction, installation, repair and maintenance, and decommissioning of industrial plant and apparatus on big industrial sites. So it's not sort of construction in sort of house building terms or civil engineering. It's big engineering projects in the energy sector, oil and gas, nuclear new build, nuclear decommissioning, renewables, steel. It's a big,
you must
big
be
heavy
very
industry.
Busy right now.
There's a lot going on. There's a hell of a lot going on, and we'll no doubt talk about that. But essentially, these companies bid for the same sort of contracts. It's a relatively small contractor community that we work with. And some of the contracts are short in duration, particularly repair and maintenance work. And as a result, the workforce is quite mobile. So you do see a lot of short-term contracts. You see a lot of agency work. And the market failure essentially is which individual employer has an incentive to invest in training when there is a high risk that, you know, that worker will move on to your competitor and you'll have paid for their training. And so that's always been a kind of a key argument for why you need the training boards. And so we essentially ensure that everyone pays in to training through the levy and everyone can get access to the funding to support training.
And therefore the wider industry is a better place to be because everyone has got better skills, more qualified, etc. You said that it came about in the 60s. Everything good seemed to happen in the 60s, didn't it?
Absolutely.
So it came about because the government said there's a market failure in engineering construction, and therefore said, right, this is how we're going to remedy it. We're now 60 years on. Like, how do you measure success? How does the government measure success? Because clearly it's working, otherwise 60 years down the line, we wouldn't still be doing it, right?
Yeah, I'd certainly like to think so. And I suppose the main metric,
good answer, by the way.
The main metric of success, Paul, for us is the level of support we get from industry. And so similarly with the CITB, we ourselves are legally required by the legislation that governs us to consult with the companies that pay our levy every 3 years and essentially ask them, do you want to continue paying the levy? And we propose levy rates and they have the ability to vote for them or against them. Voting against them essentially means that the government could turn around and say, well, the ECITB doesn't have the support of industry and therefore we are not going to take steps to put that levy into legislation.
Has that ever been a risk in that 60-year period? Has there ever been a period like in recession, credit crunch, where there's no money and then they think, actually, I don't want that levy anymore?
Well, my memory is relatively long organisationally, Paul, in that I've been here for nearly 7 years, but I can't speak for, you know, going back over the decades. But I do know that certainly since I've been here, and we've just actually gone through one of these consultations, we've gone from sort of strength to strength in building, you know, building the support. So we've literally in September consulted on levy rates for the next 3 years, 2023 to 2025, which will fund our new strategy, which we published in the summer. And the levy payers voted sort of unanimously in favour. So 85% of those levy payers, who collectively will pay around 98% of our levy, voted in favour. So, you know, in terms of measuring success, you know, we would always say, as long as industry supports the ECITB and the levy and grant system, we think we're doing okay. So, you know, we run independent customer satisfaction surveys. We evaluate all of our training programs as well. But I think that core barometer of does the industry support you and do they want to pay a levy? Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's really important for
that us. Makes perfect sense. And so practically speaking, I'm always trying to picture exactly the mechanics, if you like, of the process. So construction work gets executed by various companies, engineering construction works gets executed by various companies. That then gets transacted as kind of like a tax almost on payments and the like, is my recollection of how it works. That gets hoovered up by you guys, and then what happens?
Yeah, so It's essentially a self-declaring process. So companies have to declare the number of workers that work on engineering construction activities. It's the same for CITB, for construction activities. And, you know, the type of worker, the type of occupation is all set out in statute. They submit their declarations, they submit their labour payments against those workers, and then we calculate how much levy is owed. And once that comes in, I say once it comes in, because we obviously, it's an annual rolling process, but we use that to then budget how much funding we'll have for the subsequent year. And we bring in roughly, and it does vary because it's based on the output essentially, and how many workers are employed and what's happening with wages. It does vary, but roughly speaking, we bring in around sort of £27 to £30 million a year worth of levy. And the vast majority of that, 90+% goes back out directly in the form of training grants that employers can use to upskill their existing workforce or to bring in, new entrants, young people from other industries. And so, we've just published a new strategy. As I say, there's a big commitment there to essentially allocate half of our training grant budget towards supporting new entrants, apprentices, graduates, trainees. We've got some specific programs, which I can talk about too, Paul. And that's in recognition of, the number one issue you pointed out at the start of the program, which is how do we plug this skill shortage?
I think we'll talk about that in the second half of the show, particularly new entrants, because I think that is kind of fundamental to many of the things that are happening. I just want to ask you a question which might be difficult to answer in the context of you weren't around 60 years ago before the ECITB was a thing. But imagine a world where this wasn't happening, where there wasn't a levy, where there wasn't this redistribution of training. What do you think the engineering and construction industry would actually look like if that was the case?
That's a really good question.
I've taken him aback with that one.
Yeah, trying to work out what the counterfactual is. We do know that, when we survey our employers, and I say we have an independent company that does it for us. We occasionally ask them what would happen if we didn't have this levy and grant system that sets a level playing field. And they, I think last time we surveyed them, sort of 70+% said the training just wouldn't happen. Now, in a highly safety critical industry, if you think about the sectors I mentioned at the outset, oil and gas, nuclear, if you don't have a qualified workforce that places sort of competence at the sort of heart of everything that it does, then you don't really want to imagine what could happen. That's not to say that there wouldn't be something else, in its place. I'm sure there'd still be health and safety standards and the like. But I do think, having this ability, companies having this ability to essentially access training when they want. I mean, the other thing to say is
that they've all contributed to as well.
That they've all contributed to. The other thing to say is some of these companies, you mentioned fine margins, Paul, they often tell us that they sort of see the ECITB levy as almost, and it's not quite this because we choose how we spend it, but almost as a ring-fenced training budget. And what's the first thing that will go in a recession? You mentioned the recession.
Exactly.
Training budgets. So it's, we like to think that we play that kind of corrective role in providing access to training when, the sun's not shining.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, isn't it? Number one, recession comes in, not going to spend that anymore, which then gives you the long-term, medium-term problems, let alone the short-term ones. And also, you can understand as well, in a fluid labour environment, you do think, I'm not going to spend X thousand on that individual because they could go to my competitor, whereas you kind of just think, well, it's par for the course, isn't it? Because everyone's doing it, my competitors are doing it, so it all makes sense. I now understand exactly what it is you guys do, which is great. And I want to talk in the second half of the show about the current travails, if you like, of the labour market for our sector. But we'll do that after the break.
Hello, it's me again.
I wanted to share a quick story with you on why I co-founded C-Link with my best mate Chris. Chris and I, we're both QSs, and this is going to sound sad, but one night we were sat in the pub talking about subcontract tendering and we realised the industry had a problem. Number one, procurement was too paper-based. Number two, it was too time-consuming and every QS had their own unique way of doing things. And number three, perhaps most importantly, if you want to competitively tender, you need to know hundreds of the best subcontractors. We simply didn't. That's why we created C-Link. It's software to solve subcontract tendering. We wanted to remove these challenges and help the industry get better. So if you, or someone you know, tenders with subcontractors, you've got to see our software. Head over to our link, www.get.c-link.com/podcast to find out more. I will include it in the description box. So again, there's no excuses. Now, let's get right back to the show. David, really insightful first half of the show. We've got a clear picture now, and hopefully the listeners do too, as to exactly the purpose and like the vehicle almost for the levy and kind of what the ECITB does. Now, at the top of the show, we talked very much about the skill shortage, for want of a better phrase, the genuine lack of quantity, as well as probably some quality in the construction and engineering construction labour market. What is your view on where we're at?
Yeah, today? It's definitely an issue, as I said. It's number one challenge. I think, you know, I mentioned post-COVID, and I think within engineering construction, there's definitely been a sort of a COVID effect in that whilst activity did continue on, you know, critical sites during the various lockdowns, quite a lot of work was deferred. And so, you know, we're sort of seeing a sort of a build-up of deferred maintenance work, a lot of it is. And that is coming together at a time where there's some major projects happening. You know, I was down at Hinkley Point C a few months ago to see the progress that is being made there. And we're now on the stage of the project where our contractors are going to be deployed doing, you know, heating, ventilation, some of the sort of the kind of critical engineering that is going to be needed on that site. And, you know, a major project like HPC is not only having a draw on labour elsewhere in the industry, understandably, but they're also facing, you know, big issues in terms of finding enough electricians, finding enough steel fixers, finding enough engineering fitters. So it's facing all parts of the industry, I think. And clearly COVID's had an impact. I think there are 1 million fewer people now in the labour market since before the pandemic. Some have left because of, you know, illness. Some have just chosen to retire early. And so, you know, within engineering, within construction, we're all competing for the same sort of labour, and it's a perfect storm, really.
But so with engineering construction specifically, and it does make a little bit more sense to me now in terms of there would be a lot of maintenance work, that work would have almost completely ceased to progress during the pandemic, which means that there's then a backlog, and it sounds almost like it's a short-term demand and supply issue for that maintenance work itself, but naturally that would improve. But you've also started talking about new entrants and said that the people paying the levy specifically are really focused on new entrants, and that makes a lot of sense, which is obviously dealing with the far longer term challenge that we have as well as short and medium as well. But why then, without the obvious answer, why new entrants? Why are people willing to say to the ECITB, we want you to put your focus on new entrants?
I think it's this, Paul. You know, it's a recognition that, you know, there are various solutions that you can sort of undertake to solve the sort of labour shortage issue. I think from an ECITB perspective, you know, our remit is very much in providing training and development opportunities to people both within the industry, but also people looking to join the industry. And, you know, that's not just young people. That could be, you know, adults looking to transition into our industry at a later point in their career. You know, and that's a really, really important area of our work when it comes to providing upskilling and reskilling opportunities, including for, you know, for workers in allied sectors like construction, like transport. But the focus on, you know, the focus on growing our own, you know, is really, really important to an industry that's always, you know, placed a primacy on apprenticeships and bringing in young talent. But it's, you know, it's not without its challenges. Some of the programs that we support, some of our apprenticeships, you know, they last 4 years, and so that's not going to be a solution necessarily to plugging today's labour shortages. But, you know, as an industry, I think, you know, there's growing understanding that we need to prepare for the medium term. And as I said at the outset, there's a huge amount of project activity in the pipeline. You know, I don't know if you've read too much of the work of the Infrastructure and Projects Authority, which is another government agency, and they published their construction and infrastructure pipelines that list sort of project value and what's coming up. And there's something like $650 billion worth of contracts to be letted over the next decade. And so, you know, I think industry is looking on the horizon and thinking, you know, we need to do something about it now, and developing our own, growing the skills of the existing workforce and bringing in new entrants is a key part of that.
And of your approximately £30 million of levy that you have, how much of that are you kind of like allocating towards new entrants? And it's not about reskilling those who are already in, it's almost saying, we've got to say, that will help us in the future, we've got to start saving or spending that now.
Yeah, so our board made a commitment earlier in the year to spend just under half, 48% of our training grants on new entrants. And so that will be a mixture of things. It will be supporting apprenticeships, it will be graduates, so both white collar and blue collar, go back to your earlier point, Paul. It will also be schemes that we've developed that provide alternative routes into the industry. So in 2020 we established something called the scholarship program, which was really off the back of COVID and the big decline that we saw in the number of apprenticeship starts in the industry because of COVID, because, you know, training facilities were shut, employers were just concerned about, you know, what's happening, all these contracts are being deferred, we're not sure about taking new people on. Just the logistics of taking new people on at that time meant that those apprenticeship numbers really dwindled. And so we set up this program, which was essentially a sort of an off-the-job training program that was done initially remotely through the pandemic, and is just providing an alternative way to get in. Level two, so the idea is they do the program and then they could progress into a level three apprenticeship.
It's pretty amazing, 48%. I have to say, when I asked you that question, I didn't have a number in my mind as to what your answer was going to be, but it definitely wasn't going to be nearly half. I just kind of thought, you know, the short term will outweigh the medium and long term. But that's pretty impressive that almost half of the money is going into really thinking about strategically in the medium and long term how we can grow the numbers of new entrants to the market, to the labour, I should say, to the labour market. With, you know, we're a tech business, we're in software, we're not in the business of creating, you know, MMC, of creating robotics, of creating all these different things that can potentially, you hear, I went to London Build relatively recently, and there's lots of different things going on there, which kind of suggests we're never going to need a human being again. Give it 6 months, humans won't be on a building site, obviously being facetious. But is there anywhere a narrative forming where new entrants, I'm probably creating a stupid question considering we've just talked about new entrants and such a focus on it, but I'm answering my own question here. Foolish endeavour. But on a serious note, there is this narrative forming in the tech world that the world is going to be different. Construction site in 10, 20 years is going to be completely different. You're going to have 3D printing, you're going to have robotic bricklaying, etc., etc. I'm not going to go into all of it, but is there anywhere where, is there any scope for people saying, you know, maybe it isn't going to be maybe we're not going to need that many people in the future because of all of these things that are happening.
Yeah, I think certainly the type of skills that are going to be required is changing, and technology, digital technologies, is clearly placing, you know, even greater importance on giving workers, no matter what trade or professional discipline they're in, you know, good basic digital skills. But I think, you know, what will that mean in our industry for the total number of jobs? Because, you know, even if you use, and we're seeing this now, actually, we're seeing, you know, greater use of drones for inspection work, for instance, on some of these sites. And we've just recently developed an industrial drone operating standard to support training in that area. But, you know, even if you see a greater use of, you know, drones doing the inspection work as opposed to humans, you still need people to fly the drones.
Completely random numbers, right? If we had 10 inspectors before on a site, but now we only need two, but two of them need to be drone operators or whatever, so it's a different skill set, but is it fewer inspectors? Do you see what I mean? So is there somewhere in all of this forward thinking, strategic thinking about what the labour market will be like, is there anywhere where we're saying, you know, originally it was 100%, but with X, Y, and Z happening, we maybe only need 80 in 10, 20 years? Is that even in the thinking, or are we just thinking we need to replicate kind of what we've got, we're falling way behind?
It definitely is in the thinking, and you speak to some of the operators, some of the clients who run these sites, and we're talking, you know, multinational firms. Absolutely, technology is definitely having an impact. But, you know, looking at where we stand today, and you look at how contracts are let for some of this work, whether it's engineering design for a carbon capture plant overseas, actually some of the same principles apply. You know, we do need humans to do this work. We do occasionally need people to physically go onto an industrial site and to, you know, tighten that valve or whatever it might be. And so it definitely will change. But I think it's, you know, we've been talking about this for, you know, near on 10 years now, at least, Paul, as you know. And I think there's probably something around the pace of change not quite being as accelerated as people might, you know, think. And in a way, that's a real challenge for us. In a way, it's a real challenge. Because actually, you know, if there was a solution to the skills shortage, then surely technology and productivity enhancement through technology is part of the solution. But I think it's a longer term thing.
I agree. I mean, I was kind of saying it a bit tongue in cheek because, you know, you look at, I always talk about BIM on this show, as in, you know, it's been around for 25 years now. And yes, it's having a significant impact. But if you'd said 25 years ago we'd be where we are now, people would have said, no way, everything will be 3D, we'll all be in these models, etc. All the data points would be amazing. So when people say, you know, you're never going to need X, Y, and Z anymore because of this new technology, you do think, particularly in construction, the rate of change is not as fast as everywhere else. It's just interesting, isn't it? And I mean, with the amount of people that have left since the pandemic and the aging of the labour market as it is, particularly in construction, surely that the pace of loss at the moment means we've got to fill the gap, no matter if there is a reduced labour market. Can we talk, I guess, it's not that subtle, but it is quite subtle, the difference between ECI to EC and C, the difference. And you just talked about this massive volume of infrastructure work, which is kind of coming down the line in your side of the sector, let's say. Is that because of, like, net zero? Is that because we have to focus on that side of the sector?
Yeah, I mean, certainly mid to long term, all of our companies now are looking at contracts that you could sort of firmly place in sort of a net zero scenario, you know, projects that need to be delivered to hit our net zero targets, essentially. Yeah, whether that is, you know, government's decision to sanction another nuclear power station, and all of the associated work around small modular reactors.
Is that good
reactors
for you guys?
I mean, in terms of the labour that is required, it's definitely a challenge, but also an opportunity. I mean, I think I mentioned Hinkley Point C. They're getting up close to their peak soon, which will be 10,000 workers on site, which is a huge amount. And so we're likely to see more nuclear new build, which clearly as a low carbon energy source is really important for hitting net zero. The area that, you know, we do a lot of work with wind and offshore wind too, but I think the area that's most of interest of us is decarbonizing those industrial sites. So there's quite a lot of work going on at the moment around the industrial clusters. So the six largest clusters of industry in the UK, which, you know, collectively emit.
For example, what are they?
So we've got the Humber Bank. We've got a lot of petrochemical industries around Humberside, Teesside, your steelworks, chemicals, oil and gas. So those two clusters, you know, the amount of work that we'll need to go into to cleaning up those operations essentially is huge.
When you say cleaning them up, what does that, like retrofitting? Does it mean completely stopping them and replacing them?
Yeah, so the two key technologies that are being touted to decarbonize these clusters are carbon capture technology and also hydrogen production, essentially replacing gas with hydrogen. I think there's a report that has been published this week by Mace and the University of Chester that have identified, you know, somewhere in the region of £500 billion worth of capital investment that will be delivered just on these six clusters between now and 2050.
Really? It sounds like a really exciting, interesting, busy side of the sector. Honestly, my experience of it is next to nothing, to be honest. It was always on the construction side, not the engineering construction. Are you, like, you're not a construction person through and through, right, from the beginning?
I'm not.
You kind of came. Yeah. What was your, like,
an imposter.
What's your perception? What was your perception of construction versus what do you actually see as the reality now?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I work with a number of people, number of engineers.
And be nice.
A number, particularly when I speak to workers and, you know, some of our employers that we talk to in the industry, you know, hugely optimistic, hugely positive about, you know, the ability of this sector, engineering and construction, to respond to some of these big challenges. You know, you say it's not really on the radar in construction. I think it's coming down the track, isn't it? With, you know, retrofitting of the entire building stock with hydrogen boilers, air source heat pumps, all that sort of stuff on the domestic side. On our side, I still think it's early days. So we do have companies working on engineering design, feed studies, pre-feed work on some of the carbon capture and hydrogen production projects I mentioned. But this is just going to ramp up. You know, by the middle of this decade, more and more of these companies are going to be doing this work. You, answering your question, Paul, yeah, I'm really struck by how optimistic and positive people in this industry are about actually stepping up to the plate and tackling some of these challenges.
I think there's such a change that can be made, right? There's such a significant change. We talk about the amount of carbon that cement produces alone, right? And just as an industry that we produce, clearly there are many things that we can do. It's not a small margin. There's some big margins to attack, really, where we can change things. But are you a person, are you happy in construction now? Do you enjoy, do you think this is a really good sector for me? I'm happy. You're talking about how do you excite new entrants in. I'm guessing that as a young person, it strikes me that you weren't thinking, ooh, construction is a place that I'm going to end up, by the sounds of like your career and your journey up to this point. But that also maybe places you in quite a nice position to talk about why the sector is a sector that you enjoy now, given it sounds like your perception's been changed a bit.
Yeah, I don't think I had any sort of necessarily overly sort of firm preconceptions before I came in, Paul.
But right.
I mean, I've been here now for 7 years, and just the enthusiasm, you know, it's got challenges. We all know it's got challenges. You know, new entrants, we know construction have a problem. Engineering construction have an equally big problem in terms of making it itself more appealing to a wider demographic of the population. And that's something that we take really seriously as the training board. We work with all sorts of partners, Engineering UK, also the CITB, where we can, to collaborate to actually do something about it. But, you know, I've come into this industry, I've seen all sorts of things that, you know, reinforce some views, but equally having the ability to go and see employers on site, having the ability to go into settings and meeting their apprentices and just seeing the journey that they've come on, you know, has been really, really, you know, really excellent. And yeah, long may it continue.
Fantastic. It did bring a huge smile to your face just even thinking about that, Dave. So that's really cool. And we've come to the end of the show. I think it's been really, really interesting. We've learned quite a lot. I've certainly taken quite a bit from it. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm obviously going to share your details. I'll share the ECITB's details. I almost made it through the entire show there, didn't I, without getting it wrong.
And there you
saved
it.
At the last hurdle. Oh, can we re-record this, guys? I was really smug about that. Forget it then. But all jokes aside, thanks so much for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Excellent. And guys, as always, I will speak to you next week. Have a great weekend. Cheers.